There he is. Hurrah. Yay! I was unnecessarily, because it's a weird time for you. So it could have been whatever. Could have been, you could
It's
have thought it
well,
was tomorrow. Could have thought it
it's
was
midnight.
yesterday.
Yeah,
I
he said it's
know.
midnight. Yeah.
Sorry about making you stay up late. Are you a late sleep, a late stay upper most of the time?
No, normally I'm probably in bed by 9, 9:30.
Oof.
So,
I'm
yeah.
sorry. Hopefully this
No, it's
doesn't
all right.
screw up your day tomorrow too badly.
It'll be all
But
right.
I'm excited to catch up with you because did I meet you 2 years ago at
Yeah,
Narsal?
20. The first time we actually met, I think, was in North Carolina, but we didn't really speak until like in depth at all until Atlanta. So 2024.
2024. Yeah, that sounds about right. And
Yeah.
so it was at the in June of 20. Yeah, right. Because last year's Narsal conference got canceled
Right.
and rescheduled for October. So I met you, 2024. And what a year and a half or whatever it's been you have had.
It's been a little crazy. It
Anyway, well, thank
actually
you for.
and even oh yeah, of course. So even everything that that I've gone through, I still wouldn't trade it to spend that time under the registry. Like,
Wow. Well, that's
I
great.
got.
And I have a lot of people who are so, maybe 2 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, I lose track. We had Stephen Whitsett on the show,
Okay.
and he basically just kind of told his story and gave the case for why he thought leaving the United States should be an option for people. And since then, I've had a lot of people reach out to me on the side, asking for just guidance and connection to Stephen, and a lot of people saying, "Hey, I'm considering leaving the States. Here's what I'm thinking about," because yeah, things here just seem to keep just getting worse. We have shitty bill after shitty bill. They're mandating, I think, chemical castration in Louisiana. Death penalty for certain cases in Florida. And we get wins here and there, but there's no end in sight for people. And so the idea that they could go and live in a place where they don't have to live under this terrible shadow lurking over you and all the people around you. People are very excited to hear your story. Officially speaking, we still have 2 minutes left, so I'm not gonna actually s introduce you, but.
I do notice my daughter joined, so she's not on
Yay!
camera, but she's here. So
That's exciting.
if I say anything not factual, I'm sure she'll pipe right up. So
Excellent. Isn't that what daughters are for? Keeping us honest. Not really. No, daughters are for lots of things. I have a couple daughters myself. My older daughter just got married, and she got married in November and just got back from her honeymoon. So that was super fun watching their pictures. They went parasailing and,
Nice.
did every silly like thing that you wouldn't do in your normal life. So that was really fun to watch.
Did I see somebody in the background getting ready to go out cycling?
Yeah, that's Greg. It's like 24 degrees here, and he thinks, "What should I do now? Oh, I think I'll go cycling." 31. It's 31 degrees. Awesome.
I'd be right
Well,
there
but you
with
know
him.
what? I mean, honestly, normally he would just go to the gym on a cold day like this, but we've got this crazy idea that so I belong to the Y, and when we first moved to Wichita, he applied to join the Y, and of course they said no, you can't join the Y. And then I don't know, we kind of got it in our heads that maybe we could convince them otherwise this time, but we haven't gone to the trouble of even attempting to convince them, and so he hasn't paid for his other gym, which probably he should just end up paying for the other gym. Because the odds of them saying yes are slim to none.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just add a caveat to that. I understand. I've had a journey on this. Hi, I'm Greg. Nice to meet you. This crazy get up to
Nice
keep
meeting
work. Nice to meet you, Stephen.
you. You
I'm
too,
definitely
Greg.
going to kind of check in on your on the replay of this. Very curious if you had a chance to talk about, I don't know if this relates directly, but what it was like to fight and serve as a volunteer alongside people that were literally fighting for their lives if that's in fact what was happening. I'm curious to find out what a ground's eye view of what this conflict was like in Ukraine, because that's kind of the story we're being fed. Is that actually what's happening? No, I don't know.
You can't describe like the not just what I saw, but what I smelled, the taste in my mouth. Like I was, you know, I mean, basically almost blown up three times.
Yeah.
Like it was, I've never seen anything. I mean, there's some movies that are kind of close because it's like World War One,
Yeah.
but drones have
Yeah.
taken over. So it was, I mean, it was, I would,
From what I've
like I would just
read
say,
and
I would
heard, it's
kind of
like
like,
All Quiet on the Western Front, but a modern version of it, essentially. Is it
I mean,
maybe?
it's almost, I mean, it was what I would just imagine hell would be like.
Yeah.
There were like the trees were leveled in a lot of, I mean, complete cities leveled,
Yeah.
forests leveled, just and you're living in trenches, you're living under the ground, you know, like under the ground.
Wow.
And
Yeah.
it was, you know, like a lot of times, I, you know, I haven't even shared a lot of this stuff with my daughter because,
It's too much.
you know, yeah, it was probably too much, but
Yeah.
you know, it was horrible. It was,
Yeah.
and if I would have thought that there was actually a chance of getting a passport, I would have stuck around. But I did get my what they call it, it's your Ubiday card, it's your veterans card.
Yeah.
So I can go back there anytime and they can't kick me out.
Nice.
But I don't have
Yeah.
citizenship, so
Got that for you.
but yeah,
But
one like right now
right now,
it's not a place that anyone would want
it's
to
not a place
be.
to live. Yeah.
No, not
We
even
knew when we were in Germany, we had a couple of Ukrainian associates that were part of our little camp at our festival, and they were all sufficiently traumatized that we just knew not to like talk about it. You know, it's just being a Ukrainian, living in Kyiv. We're like, oh yeah, there's wait, hang on, there's bombs dropping. Hang on, you know, when we're like doing one of these kind of things, like, oh God. Anyway, but more to the thing about the YMCA, the first time I got refused, and any time this would happen to me, I would just get really bitter internally. But one of the things that's kind of changed my mind on this is a lot of the revelations that have come out, on this sounds really banal, but like the revelations about Jeffrey Epstein and his circle. And you know, one of the things that's happening is that everyone wants to keep their name off the list. Why? Because you know who's on the Jeff, you know, his list of associates? Everyone. Everyone who's
Right.
who. He made himself because he was a grifter. He was a scammer from of the highest order. And basically, he was a way of conduit through, what do you want? You want power? You want prestige? You want money? You want to talk to a rich guy? I can do that. Oh, you want to have sex with a teenage girl? I can arrange that too. So any sort of perversion you want, if you just want to live a basic life, you had nothing to want it, or you didn't need him, you wouldn't have anything to do with him. Because everyone that was like this serious session of perverse wanting, more power, more money, more sex. Ooh, sex with someone I can't have sex with. You could do it through Jeffrey, and he was the conduit. It's like the devil. But a lot of people really stood back from him because they just realized that guy is scary. And I'm like, huh, I can understand that. And you know, when you look at someone, say, who's like the director of the YMCA, your fiduciary responsibility is to the families and people that join that facility. And you know, to bring into this mix an individual who has a documented history of some issues this way, you're like, I don't care. You could be the nicest guy I've ever met. And even if the risk is 0.00001% risk, that's not something they're willing to take because they cannot individually adjudicate this. So by definition, you're exempt, period. And at first I'm like kind of pissed about it because they're making a value judgment about me. I know I'm safe. I know I'm not going to use the opportunity to start grooming, you know, children. There's no way they can know that to a high enough degree of satisfaction for them to say yes. And I've made peace with that, honestly. So
hey, could you feel my teeth before you go?
sure. Anyway.
Okay.
Okay,
Well, I'll tell you,
so
I haven't made peace with that one.
yes.
I, you know, people coming out with murder charges, serious aggravated assault, and you know, I have a download crime. I'm like, really? I can't go visit
XYZ, but this person is a safe bet. So, yeah. So, Steve, are you in Cambodia now?
Yes.
So, here are my general questions, and hopefully we can cover some of this before you finish the hour. But I was weeks away from making a move to Peru at the time that I picked up my charges in 2023. And I was actually given permission twice while on pretrial by the judge to continue those trips without incident. Went twice. Last year, having gotten to a, almost completed with my therapeutic requirement, in the good graces of my PO, I got letters from everyone saying, hey, you can go to Peru again. I had letters from my people there for the film I'm working on, the communities, et cetera. And of course, I got to customs in Peru. And very politely, I will say, compared to US customs, they're like, nope, we can't let you in. So I said, let's talk about this. What's going on? I got these letters, et cetera. And basically he said, I can tell you love Peru. You've been here many times. Show up without a DHS notification, and you can be here as often as you want. So, my two questions are, once I'm off probation, which I'm hoping is about 12 months from now, how do I get there without triggering a felony upon my return for not having notified all my destinations? Can I do it via Europe and book a second ticket and get there and come back 6 months later, even though I've told my local PD, oh, I've got a 2 week, trip? I mean, essentially, I'd love to be able to be there 6 months a year and still return to the US to see my family. If that's a no-go, I would rather find myself somewhere else and never be able to come back than not be able to continue to move about the world when my sentence is done. I won't accept the registry and those provisions as being sane or reasonable. So, where like, do you have a citizenship in Cambodia? Do you have a
No.
passport?
Passport, long-term visa. I just put in for the government of Cambodia actually has my passport right now so that they can redo my visa.
But you have a
So
Cambodian passport.
no. United
U.S.
States
passport.
passport.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you
And
and what did you tell folks here on the U.S. side? Hey, I'm going to
I
Cambodia and I'm
so
not.
I was no, I was in Indiana. My plans were, I had been talking with Stephen Whitsett for some time, and so my plans were to move to Germany. So when I left Indiana, I told them I'm leaving and I'm never coming back. And if I do come back, it will not be to Indiana. And that's
Right.
how I left the United States. So when I left
Yeah,
the
so
United
essentially,
States,
hey,
I had
I'll pay attention to the registry. If I come back in this country, I'll contact the local authority, wherever that is, but I'm not returning from this one-way trip.
And that's how I left it.
And did you already
They
have confirmation that you could get a residency permit within Cambodia or another country at the
Oh
time you departed?
no. Like Cambodia wasn't even on my radar. My original
Yeah,
plan
I think we
was
should
to
let's
I'm jumping
start
ahead.
with like just tell us your give us your outline of your story, because although I
Sure.
know it just because I met you 2 years ago and I've been following you, most people have no idea. So maybe just share with give us your 10-minute recap or
Well,
whatever.
first, before I start on that, I just want to touch on something that Greg was talking about with the YMCA, and if there's even a 0.00001 chance. And my daughter doesn't, like she's told me she's probably not going to talk, but like her and I have even had that discussion. Even with my grandkids, she's like, I trust you and all this other kind of stuff, but honestly, it's the impression of, I can't be, she can't let me be alone with my grandkids because that would, that would give somebody else grounds. We actually had someone call the Children Protective Services in Illinois just because I was around them. So they had to come and do they had to come and do a complete investigation, and like, for the record, I completely agree, with all of it. I myself, I just don't want I don't even want the chance of an accusation coming up. So I completely understand the YMCA's policy, and Oh, yeah. Yeah. So my daughter says it was because on social media, I was in the picture with the kids, without her present, but she's the one that took the picture. I didn't know that's what started it, but now I know. But anyway, so I had been talking to Stephen Whitsett. I had my own business. I was moving to Germany, where I had started the process of applying for, my long-term visa. And, eventually what I was hoping to do was gain German citizenship. While I was in Germany, I basically had to shut down my business. I lost my biggest customer, and it just kind of threw a wrench, in the program. So instead of Germany, if you guys don't know, is a lot cheaper than the United States, but it's a relatively expensive country to live in. So I looked at my options, talked to some people, and somebody said, "Hey, I've got a friend in Morocco. So he said that you can come stay at his riad. He's moved to the Philippines. He's never going to return to Morocco. But before I went to this riad, I was going to take it over. I went and I did some volunteer work out in the Sahara, helping a guy rebuild his house. Every 50 years or so, the Sahara gets flooded. This guy's place got flooded. I went out and helped him basically build a fortress so that the waters wouldn't come and destroy his life again. And then I went to stay at this riad, and it wasn't quite the dream that I had been sold. It was supposed to be a business opportunity, but it was going to be a business opportunity where I paid all the money and I took all the risk, and other people were going to be kind of coming in and out without investing any money. So it was while I was in living in Fez, Morocco, that I originally went to Ukraine to volunteer at a food. It was called Hell's Kitchen. It was in the east part of Ukraine. And I got to Ukraine, I kind of had it in my mind about joining, the Foreign Legion, but I'm in my 50s. It's kind of a, war is a young man's game. Sad to say, but there's, it was physically demanding. Mentally was just beyond anything that a person could ever prepare for. But I got there. I got to Eastern Ukraine, to where Hell's Kitchen was located. Found an apartment, and it was like 2 days later. I went and talked to the people at the Foreign Legion office. I'd already done all my research on kind of what it entailed or what I thought it meant. And a couple of days after that, I was at a training camp. And 2 days after I got to the training camp, I had an AK-47 in my hands, and off to work I went. It was, I think, the first time I went out. I lasted about it. The whole thing lasted about 36 hours, I came away bruised. My shoulder got separated. On that mission, but then I was back for about 4 days and was right back out after that. And it was on the third time that the third time I don't know exactly what happened. I know that we lost two guys that had been there with me the whole time. I lost it. Sounds kind of funny, but I lost my boots, I lost my pants, and I had a magnet that had my favorite picture of my youngest daughter. I had another magnet that had this daughter's family on it. And I lost that the little magnet of my youngest daughter somewhere along the way. And after that, they wouldn't send me out anymore because I was just too banged and bruised up. And
You would have gone out again?
oh yeah, I mean, Once you get in, and like I said, I haven't shared any of these pictures with with anybody, but once you get in and you see, I mean, it was almost like I had an adopted family. I've got kids that are young. I mean, kids that were from all over the world that were younger than my youngest daughter, looking to me for, like guidance on things. And, it was kind of like, I don't want to let them down. And they didn't have the same problems in life that I had, but, they, all of them had some kind of backstory, something that drove them to Ukraine. And, I'm kind of I'm a fixer. I want to fix things. And so, like I tried to basically be a good role model for them and try to keep them, really kind of like as safe as possible. But
How many of the people who are working under you were Ukrainians versus people from other countries like you?
zero Ukrainians. It was all
No
foreign,
Ukrainians.
all foreign. No Ukrainians. I had one Ukrainian that basically did translation for me, but that was it. Everyone that I worked with spoke English, but I also helped train people from Brazil and Colombia, who make up the most of the foreign fighters there, Colombians and Brazilians. So got to practice my Spanish a little bit, and
And what,
trying to.
like, I know what brought you there. What brings someone from Brazil, or why are they like, oh, you know what I want to do? I want to go fight a war in a country that isn't my country.
That's what they do at home, though. They're like, they grew up fighting. They grew up either fighting against the cartel or for the cartel. And now things are kind of on the quiet side. But even in their, like in Colombia, I think their median income, like these guys are saying, they make 250, 300 bucks a month. If you go to Ukraine and you stay on the front line, like if you're just there for 30 days out of the month and you just are fighting the whole time, which I didn't do. I went like a day and a half, 2 days. We got our part done and we went back. The Colombians will just go out there and stay all month long because they can make about 3,500 bucks a month. So to them, in 1 month, they could make what they would make in a whole year back in Colombia or Brazil. And they just send the money home. The same thing that immigrants do in the United States. They come, they take the job, like not take the jobs, but they take the shit work that no one else wants to do, and they use that to support their families. And I completely understand it from a completely different viewpoint. I've never been against it, regardless, because I don't know if anybody's ever worked on a farm, but it's not easy work. And like just a lot of the like taxi drivers and everything else, like the shit that nobody else wants to do. And it's the same
Absolutely.
thing, like it's the same thing in Ukraine, where like a lot of the Ukrainian citizens left. A lot of them sought asylum in the United States or in other countries, Germany, Poland, anywhere close, because they didn't want to. Like they kind of grew up fighting a little bit themselves, and they didn't want any part of it. So they left. And people like me that had never seen that kind of violence up close, like when you watch it on TikTok or something like that, and there's music in the background, it's one thing, but when you're there in the middle of it, it's completely different. No, I didn't have any previous military experience. Just grew up kind of in the country. Like learned how to that it basically it's just a survive it's a survival skill. That's what I had to offer to these guys the most was, like how to keep going when things get tough, and just trying to keep their heads on straight, and just tell them to slow
What
down
a.
and breathe.
So you were in Germany for how long? Then you were in at the place in Morocco for how long? And then how long did your stint in Ukraine last?
I went to Germany. I just stayed there 90 days. I had all my stuff in to like for my visa and everything, and had an appointment, but I had to make a choice, to stay there. Rent was, I mean, pretty expensive. I think my apartment was like $1,200 a month. I could have found something cheaper, but the hard thing is without the visa, the only thing you can get is short-term rentals, and those are more expensive. So,
Sure. Yeah, once you lost your job, staying in Germany was just kind of off the table.
it was just off the, and so I went to Morocco. My original plan was just to stay in Morocco for a while, because I thought I had a solid place. But like I said, when I got there, and it just wasn't. In Morocco, you can leave Morocco. There's a small part of Spain that is on the continent of Africa, connected to Morocco. And what you do is you just take a bus or a taxi from Tangier up to the border. You walk across, you go have a coffee, you come back, and it just resets your 90 days. It's not the same as like the Schengen zone where, you got 90 days and you have to be gone for 90 days. Or I was thinking, I could maybe patch things up with my customers, and but without me putting it in FaceTime with them, in the United States, it just didn't work out. And I thought, if I could get my business going again, then I could go right back, right back to someplace in Europe. I knew that Germany wasn't probably where I, where I wanted to be, but there's Europe is just wide open. Albania is an American citizen. You can go there for a year without a visa. So I had kind of thought about those things, but just something about Ukraine, and I just got it in my head and ended up there. So Germany, 3 months, Morocco, 3 months, all together in Ukraine, only 7 months, but it felt like I was there for like years. I've been in Cambodia for about 7 months now, and
So,
I'll get my.
how did you go? I don't think I even have heard the how you. I know that you got hurt too many times, and they basically said you can't fight anymore. And then
Yeah.
what? Tell us that part of the story.
So the last few months, I basically just trained people.
I remember that.
And that's really what it was just just training, like the new guys that come in. I ended up doing a psychological study while I was there. I interviewed, I'd have to look at over 600 people. I interviewed over 600 people. What was their motivation for coming? Like, did their family know that they were there? Do they have any kids? Just those kind of questions. And I did basically a small PhD type dissertation on, my experience and what drove people to, go there. And, just kind of went back to, so I was the one that was, if somebody came into the Foreign Legion and they weren't fit, we had a lot of people that showed up who either weren't physically fit at all. And like my backpack would weigh over 100 pounds. So I'd have to be carrying over 100 pounds. Well, I mean, with gear and everything, I'm carrying over 100 pounds. And you had people that couldn't walk hardly at all. Yeah, just showing up. And then we have some people that showed up that weren't mentally fit. So it was my kind of, it ended up being kind of my responsibility to kind of weed those people out.
And that was
And
still within that 7 months.
yeah, still within the 7 months.
Yeah, it felt like 2 years just to me watching from the sidelines. So I can't imagine how long it felt to you.
I didn't actually have any time to myself until like the last 2 or 3 months, and then I was given like every other weekend, I could leave and go into the city, and most of that time was going to medical appointments, trying to figure out if they could fix my shoulder, adjust it, like adjusting medication and all that kind of stuff. So, not really any fun. I made it look fun on the pictures, like grabbing something to eat and here's a pizza and a beer. But the whole time, like I could barely walk. I couldn't use this arm at all. Yeah, it wasn't all it was cracked up to be.
So, how did you eventually, did they let you out of your contract? Because you had to sign like
Yeah,
a 3-year contract.
Yeah, so I signed a 3-year contract, and yeah, they let me break my contract. I left Ukraine. It took me, I don't know, like it took me over a day and a half just to get out of Ukraine, because nothing, you can't fly. So it was catching a bus from here to here, and then you wait and catch another bus. And when I finally left, I've made a post that I can't do anything the easy way. And so I was on a bus, on a boat, going across the Danube. So left in a bus, on a boat, going across the river to get out of Ukraine. So and then the bus, I ended up going to Istanbul and stayed there for about a week. And then from Istanbul, flew to Bangkok. And then from Bangkok, flew into Phnom Penh. And I was in Phnom Penh for a week and decided that it was too big of a city and moved to my current city, which is kind of a tourist town. And I absolutely love it. And like all I can say, like I've got friends that have been to Peru, and that are on the, like on the registry, and they like just last year went to Peru, and really want to go back, but he's going to come to Cambodia first. He just had some surgery, but
For what kind of surgery?
he just had surgery that he's going to heal from. He lives in New Mexico. I'm not sure exactly what the issue was. He's just like, I had surgery, I'm going to heal, and then I'm going to come to Cambodia. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah, and
But
how did you
he
pick
so
Cambodia?
he actually was denied entry. I didn't. Someone picked it for me.
Okay.
I had everything, and I know it sounds like jumping out of the frying pan into the fire, but I had everything set up to go to Israel. Like I had all my documents. So my network was unstable. Sorry. I had all my documents to go to Israel, so I was going to do that, and somebody suggested Cambodia, like at the last minute. And I said, sure, why not? Israel wasn't sounding too good. But it was someplace that it was another place that there's, citizenship possible. You just have to convert to Judaism, which I thought, nah, for the cost of another passport, that doesn't sound too terrible. Like I said, at the last minute, someone was like, why don't you go to Cambodia? We've got people in Cambodia. So I come down here, and there's some other people here that used to live in the United States and left for the same reasons. And
Oh, so you have
one guy, him and I,
a
we
group of people that
meet.
you know who are there for the same reason you're there for?
Only one now. There were a couple more, and one of them was actually a girl that was on the registry, a woman, and she decided that she would rather be on the registry than be this far away from her family. And like my family, I think for the most part understands, that
So you're making friends. You're
yeah. It's and
nice.
it, the people here are like super nice. Just the, I mean the Cambodians themselves, I would say that they're out of I've been now I've been on this last journey altogether, I've been to 24 different countries, I think. And out of yeah, just I mean sometimes it was just for a couple of days, like traveling through, backpacked through Netherlands, Belgium, France, Austria, Switzerland, Czech Republic, and Poland. Because in Germany, I had the Bahn card, and you just get on a train. It was 50 euros a month, and so I'd get on a train and take it to a border town and walk across the border and go hike and down to another part of Germany, get on a train and go back home. So it was,
Wow.
yeah, it was pretty.
Okay, we have a lot
It
of questions.
was,
So
yeah,
let's run through at least a few of the questions.
sure.
So first, John mentioned, please remember the presence of non-Americans who fought with us in our war for independence. Quite a few came to fight because they believed in the principles espoused in the Declaration of Independence. But today, certainly as far as people forced to register in our families are concerned, yeah, definitely. Okay, someone's asking, Well, Michael has his hand up, so I'll just let him do those long distance. And John also has his hand up, so I guess I
Okay.
will call on John since he's got his hand up the longest. All right, John.
Stephen, good day. Good day to you.
Hey, John.
I've got two questions, but I would like to share a little something beforehand.
Sure.
You were talking about your experiences. When I was accused, my brother, whose career military severed all ties, then later he had two tours of duty in Iraq. And at least once on each of those two tours, he came skin close to being killed. And those experiences, I believe, helped him to see that it would be worthwhile to start mending fences or rebuilding the bridges that he had burned, as far as I was concerned. Now, it's not perfect as yet, but it's kind of akin to what you experienced, I'm hoping is going to be something that will make him and others realize that keeping someone frozen out because we're on a registry is going to be the exact wrong thing to do. So I did want to share that with everybody. Now, the two questions that I've got for you. I lived for some years before, long before I was accused. I worked and lived in Southeast Asia. I
Okay.
was in primarily Malaysia, but I spent considerable time in other parts of the region, Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, various other places. Now, while some of those nations have since become more or less off limits to persons on the registry, I'm thinking Philippines, Singapore for sure. From your time in that part of the world, you said Cambodia. What's your take on other countries relating to people who are on the registry? That's my first question. The second question, and again, I'm only speaking for myself, but this is probably going to involve maybe some others who are listening in who are thinking about going there. I'm a senior citizen. I am disabled and I am very low income. Should I uproot myself to move to Cambodia or to Germany or someplace else? The fact that I might need to fall back on government support for hospitalization, for so much other things. Would that factor be in any way, shape, or form a problem for someone like me over and above being on the registry? Would that be so any sort of a problem or a hindrance in relocating?
Okay. So the first thing I'll address is the registry part, because I did see a question pop up that for people that want to move, my recommendation, no matter where you want to go, Philippines is definitely off the table. You said Singapore, but I know somebody that's living in Singapore right now. Just talk with him on Monday morning, and the whole part about leaving the US is to go to a country where they're going to accept you. So I can give you my experience, and that was flying into Frankfurt Airport. I left Atlanta after spending the weekend chatting with Anne. Or I guess it was the weekend. I got on a plane in Atlanta and flew into Frankfurt, Germany. And I had a folder like this thick. It had a letter from my daughter, like it had every transcript of college that I had. Like I was prepared to be interrogated at the border. I had, I mean, bank records. I had everything in this folder. And I show up to Frankfurt, Germany, and the guy just looks at me in perfect English and says, "How long are you going to be in Germany for?" And I was like, "Right now, I'm planning on 89 days, but I'm going to apply for my visa." And he just said, "Stamp my passport," and said, "Okay, have a good day." And I walked through border control. It was like I could physically feel the pressure come off me as I walked through. But that's what you have to do. Like people get turned away. Like the guy that's in Singapore, he got turned away from Malaysia. Because he traveled from the United States to Malaysia. But this time he did it different. He went into Europe. And Once you leave and you don't have the angel watch notice, or some people have even, like one guy attempted to go to the UAE from the United States, and they put a Interpol green notice on him. And so he's dealing with UAE because that's where his wife is from. She's a Philippine working in the UAE. I think everybody really has. I saw Mitchell just asking a question about some countries have access to databases. And I think that's mainly the Philippines definitely do. They will not only detain you, but they will put you on their Facebook page, making fun of you for trying to come in. So I would not attempt Philippines in any way, shape, or form, no matter what countries you go through. But then, I mean, Great Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, they all have close ties with the United States. I do know some people that have went into China. So China mainland, and people that have been to Malaysia, Laos, Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, just about every, you look at the travel matrices and it'll say like you can't get in there. And really what that means is you can't fly directly. You have to kind of have a buffer. And most people use someplace in the Schengen zone because I mean, basically because they don't look at the crimes the same way that other people, do it. I'll just bring up Stephen Witset in Germany. His thing wouldn't even have been a crime. He was 20 something. The kid was 17, like
Yeah, and
consensual.
17 is over the age in
Yeah.
Germany.
In Germany, it's 14, but it still, like it wouldn't have been
And
a,
escaping from prison isn't illegal in Germany. They're like, of course you
right.
tried to escape from prison. If you escape from prison, that's kind of on us.
Yeah. I mean, that's a crazy, crazy story, but but that's the whole thing is Mitchell's asking about going to a secondary destination. I think for one, I think if they did try to press charges on somebody for that, they would have to show intention, like if somebody just, but that's literally what's on the form is they just ask you where you're going and where you're going to stay. They don't ask you how long you're going to be there. It's like in my case, I told them that I'm not coming back. And if I said, if I do, it will not be to Indiana. And they said, well, where would you go? And I said, I don't know, California. I have no idea. But I know that I'm not coming back to Indiana. There was just everyone here has different experiences on the registry. And I was getting a visit every month. And there was instances where I would be on the Sunday night Zoom call on NARSOL, and that's when they would come, and there would be five police cars, five county sheriff's cars to do the stop. They would actually block the intersection near my house with their lights on and call me and tell me to come downstairs. I lived in an upstairs apartment, and it just, I mean, it was. And all because I tried pushing back a few times, like they're like, hey, and I'm like, that's not how the law works. And they basically said, well, we are the law. We're going to show you how it works. And like they went to my neighbor's house. If I didn't answer my door, they would go knock on my neighbor's door. And, when's the last time you've seen him? And all of these kind of, all these kind of things. And all my neighbors knew me and they're like, had no, like, no problems with me whatsoever. But what really drove me, I had a great job. I was the second in charge of a large auto dealer group, making great money. There's an app, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's called the Citizen app, and it tells you what crimes are happening in your neighborhood. And what they started doing was when anyone would get within a quarter mile of my house and they had the Citizen app, it would send them a notification that there was a sex offender in the area. And so Papa John's wouldn't deliver to me anymore. And what I was really afraid of was that my work address was going to pop up, and it was in a very busy area of town and also in a very crime-ridden area of town. So like that's the whole reason I had the Citizen app, was so that when something happened bad near my work, I knew to, I'd call the other managers and say, hey, you guys, watch out, somebody just robbed this place or whatever. And then I was on the Zoom meeting one time and my phone went off and I'm like, what is, oh, great. And I shared with the guys on Narsil. I was like, well, look at my screen. Somebody, like it's telling me that I'm 11 meters away from myself right now, or 11 yards or whatever it was. I can't remember, but it was basically to the road. And the notification come up that I was in the area, and I mentioned it. And then, like I said, not too long after that, I ordered a pizza from Papa John's online. They called me and said they couldn't deliver. They just said there was an issue with my address. And so that's when I started. My original idea was not even to leave the United States. I was going to buy some property in New Mexico. There's a county in New Mexico called Socorro County. And you can go there and basically live in your van, in this one little area that was subdivided back in the 60s or 70s. You can buy an acre for like $1,500, and there's no building requirement. You don't have to, like, I bought some property in Colorado to do the same thing, and then found out that I couldn't, that I could only stay there up to 2 weeks out of a year, if I was camping. But I just anything to get away from the technology, was my idea. But yeah, just life got too crazy. I don't know. I know I'm off track from some of the questions, but let me just see. I'll start at
Yeah,
the.
I'm looking back because the question list is just getting bigger and bigger because
Yeah.
people are very interested in this topic. Did you answer the is it more affordable to live where you live now than other
Oh,
places?
yes. Okay, yeah, I do need to answer that part for John. So, like, I live right in the center of town. Like, everything is right here. And it's one bedroom. I'm in my bedroom, separate living room, kitchen, a nice big bathroom, and a balcony. A balcony on this side and a balcony on that side. And it's $200 a month. Yeah, all together with my last month for everything I've got. So I have high speed internet, my cell phone with, I mean, I'd never go through my data on my cell phone, water, electricity, gas, rent, and I have a scooter. Trying to think of what else I include in that. But it was all together, my bills come to $380 last month.
Wow.
And the biggest part for me, I don't know if you guys can tell, but I like to eat. So the biggest part for me is food. When I first got here, I would just go out to eat, because you can grab a meal for about $2 to $3. And that's, I mean, enough to get you full. So for $9 a day, you could go eat. But now I go do my own shopping, do my own cooking. I pay $2.50 a kilo for chicken breast, so it's like $1.25 a pound, basically, for chicken breast. I've got my chicken lady. I go buy my eggs from a, like, that's all she does. She just sells chicken, at the market. A guy that just sells eggs. So I've got an egg guy that I talk, like I go, I hang out, I talk. He speaks five languages. He just picked up Chinese, like no big deal. So I talk to him a lot. Go talk to my chicken lady. She just got a new refrigerator. Like it's so far behind the United States in customs. It's more like what it was when I was growing up. And I remember, like, we had milk delivered and bread delivered to the house. Back in the 70s. And it's kind of what, it's the same thing here. If I want, like a five, I don't know, like huge bottle of water or whatever, there's a guy I call, which I don't, because I also have reverse osmosis in the apartment. So, don't have to worry about clean drinking water. But there's just a guy you call and you don't go down and pick it up. They actually, like, I'm on the third floor. So they will actually walk up the stairs with the water, bring it. Same thing with the, 'cause it uses natural gas
Wow.
for the stove, and for like $16, They bring you a new bottle and it lasts forever. And you just, there's supermarkets. Like you can go to the supermarket and take the escalator or, like a, it's a moving bell upstairs, three floors high. But I prefer to go to the old market. It's like people start showing up about 7 o'clock in the morning with, I mean, fish that are still flopping. The chicken is done right there.
Wow. So you make a strong case for just livability. And so what is the rule there? You don't have citizenship and you have to leave how often?
I don't have citizenship, and I'm it here at 55. You can get a retirement visa, which I turned 55 this year. So, and like I don't deal with the actual government at all. And that's another nice thing is I go to a travel agent, which is crazy, take my passport in, and then she has somebody that takes a bunch of passports to Phnom Penh and they do all the paperwork for you. It doesn't cost you any more money than if you went and did it yourself. Yeah, it's crazy. But so she put me in for the retirement visa, and I don't know if I'll get it yet. I should find out anytime. But if not, then they'll just extend it 90 days. So I've been here 1 month with a 6 month extension, and I'll either get a retirement visa, and that's good for 1 year, and you don't have to leave. You just keep renewing that every year. Or I'll get a 90-day visa. I'll have to, like, I'll go to Vietnam or Laos or, somewhere, spend a couple of days and come back and then go, for my for the retirement visa. But she's pretty sure that they'll give it to me because I
Wow.
turned 55 this year. So,
Wow.
yeah. And
Okay,
if
so let's see. So many questions. Someone asked the question about your medical care.
So medical care, that would,
Oh, and Mitchell's
that's
hand's
really,
still up.
yep.
Forgot about that.
But John did ask about medical care, and I wanted to get to that too. Yes. So, medical care is going to be pretty much on the person. The good thing is it's not very expensive, and I've had to have a lot of work done since I've been here. Like the last time they needed, I've got a doctor in the United States that will look at my blood work for me. And so I've had to do a couple different panels, and each time there was, I've had to go get my blood drawn twice, and each time it was, there were like 16 different things that they were looking at, because in Ukraine they had me on like a very, very high dose of prednisone for months and months and months, and it messed up my adrenal glands and like all that good kind of stuff. So, but 200 and like $280 to have 16 or 17 different tests ran on my blood, I didn't think was too shabby. And then, like I deal with a psychologist from the United States, and he tells me, basically what meds I need to take to, keep my anxiety down and deal with stuff. And you don't even need a prescription. So I go get my antidepressants. It's like $10 a month for, for some SSRIs. And then, like to help me sleep, I do Xanax, and it's like $3.50 for a box of so most of what I spend my money on is like clean protein sources, and just regular vitamins and minerals and things like that. But if like I said, my place, all my bills, $380. I don't know what, like what medical, things that you would need, but it's definitely a lot cheaper here, but there's no kind of government assistance here. You would have to rely on, like a lot of people
You
have
have to
Social
use what
Security.
you saved by not spending $2,000 a month on
Right.
your other stuff. Use that money to pay for your medical care. Okay. All right, Mitchell, you've had your hand up for a hot minute. Let's see how to unmute Mitchell.
I see that he said that he's been asked for a day-to-day itinerary when putting in
Oh, there we
travel
go.
plans.
Unmute.
Yeah, when I didn't get into Peru, but when I went to my local PD to tell them my travel plans, they requested a "Where are you staying each night of your journey?" They wanted a full itinerary of location. It didn't matter ultimately because I got turned around at the border, and the Peruvians were great. It was U.S. Customs that was brutal coming back. As I'm sure anybody who's traveled back with a registry tag in their passport knows. I was curious. I had so many questions. What's that?
So it doesn't even take that. I've heard questions from other Americans traveling back to the United States without any kind of criminal history whatsoever. Talk about being detained at the, for hours on end. So it's the way that our police forces are trained in the United States. It's called stress training. It's the reason a police officer puts his thumb on the back of your car when he walks up to leave a fingerprint, because they think that everyone is going to try and kill him. And that's just how they're trained. That's just the way that's the training they go through. And it's so much different in other parts of the world. My first like romantic relationship outside the United States was in Germany. And it was about on the fourth date when I found out she was a police officer. And I would have never known. Like she had her driver's license taken away. I knew that she had her driver's license taken away for speeding before I knew she was a police officer. And then when I tried to explain to her that, like the thin blue line in the United States, and like that's the very first thing you know about people is that someone is a police officer, because that's just you just find out right away, and she just thought it was crazy. But yeah, it's but anyway.
So, I think, and I'm looking at some of the questions I've written. I mean, one question I had is, if you're traveling around with a U.S. passport that has an identifier in it, but there's not a DHS notification, have you ever had an issue with a border saying, "Oh, I see this little mark here"?
No.
Another question is, like, what do you do when your passport expires? Let's say I leave and I'm saying I'm not coming back, but you don't then get residency and a passport in another country. At some point, you're stuck, right? If you don't have
No,
a valid passport.
you can renew it through an embassy. That's I've one of the guys that's here. He had to renew. He was on probation and got permission from probation to move to Ukraine before the war started. So he was in Ukraine already while he was on probation, and then moved from
Wow.
Ukraine into Romania while still on probation. And Romania put him on Romania's registry. And while he was there, he was the last person that they ended up changing the law, but he was the last person who got the identifier removed from their passport because they weren't required to register in the United States anymore. So he
Gotcha.
put in for it. They took the marker out while he was in. So he went to the embassy in Romania, got a new passport, and he didn't have any trouble until he went to leave Romania, and his new passport didn't have any kind of had no stamps whatsoever, and they just swore up and down he was CIA. Like they gave him trouble because they just gave him basically, I hope it's okay I cuss on here, but they just gave him shit because they thought he was CIA. Like they
Of
just
all the things you could be mistaken for, it's pretty funny, right? I guess the other question I have is, so like, did you take stuff with you? One of my like a lot of stuff. I'm looking around, I've got a full library of books. I've got, hundreds of pounds of woodworking tools. I've got 27 stringed instruments in my bedroom. And the idea of abandoning those tools, it's hard to think, hard to consider. I'm like, well, do I ship a shipping container to some neutral country and then pick it up later when I figure out where I am? I just don't know. And then this worry about getting in trouble with the registry upon return, is something I really want to sort out, because I'd like to know, if I leave, can I never come back? I have a 10-year registry term post probation. So probation, I'm hoping I'll be receive early release in a year, but that's still, 11 years in which I'll have to deal with that. I think if I were 30 right now, I might say, all right, I'll travel when I'm 40, but I'll be 60 next week, and I don't want to wait until I'm 71, especially since there's no guarantee that, your request is granted. So just trying to figure out how I can keep the tools that I've gathered over a
Right.
lifetime of this work and find a place to live. You know, half the year in Cambodia and half in Peru sounds pretty damn good to me. And
Yeah,
actually, I don't know if
I
you know anything
learned.
about Laos, but I have an uncle who has contacts. He's passed now, but you know, spent many years in Laos, and that's another place I would be intrigued by.
Yeah, one of the guys that lives here, that's where he's had to do a border run a couple of times while he was getting things kind of situated, and that's where he went. So he just caught a bus, like a VIP bus from here, like lap of luxury, you know, like a conversion van basically, and they just drive you right into Laos and drop you off at your hotel, and then you just catch another one back. But no, I've mentioned this to other people, but when I left the United States, I basically had 100 pounds worth of stuff on me. You know, like whatever I could fit in my suitcase, my carry-on, and my personal item. When I left Germany, I probably left 70% of what I took to Germany in Germany. Found a place that accepted donations, and just kind of left everything. And then when I was in Germany, I bought a tent, a sleeping bag, a backpack, and the things that you would need to survive on. And like one of my plans was, you know, like if things didn't work out, I can always, you know, go to Albania and just kind of backpack around for, you know, like I had no idea what I was going to do when I lost my income, when I was gone. But as far as what I took with me, like I just kept narrowing it down. My daughter's got a whole bunch of crap, and well, I mean, she might not have it anymore, but I left a bunch of stuff at her house. I have some really nice bicycles, cost as much as a car, and I left them at my brother's house. Left my other brother all kind of just stuff, like my desktop computer I gave to my youngest daughter, things like that, that you know, just really what I could get on the airplane. And by the time I left Ukraine, I had like three pairs of shorts, a handful of t-shirts, some underwear, socks, a couple pairs of boots, and the, you know, like some sandals, and that was like that's it. Like,
Somebody's asking, what do you do for income when you're in another country?
so right now I do some
Obviously,
work.
joining the Ukrainian army
Yeah.
was part of it. That
That
didn't work
was
out so great.
that Ukraine cost me more money. It cost me money to be there, basically. Yeah, Ukraine was the most expensive part of my journey by far. Right now I do research for some human rights organizations that are involved with everything from the LGBTQ community to registry type laws. You know, so I basically research for them. I find articles, news from all over the world. You know, like I spend most of my day on Reddit going through, you know, like all kind of different posts on Reddit. It's not going to make me rich, but it pays my bills here. There's been a couple of times, you know, looking at Larry's question, he says, is it scary to travel the world while on the registry? And that has been no. My identifier is right on the front, and no one's ever questioned me. No one's ever looked at it. It went through, like, it got turned into the Ukrainian government, and like I don't have a passport from there, but I do. Like, it went through the Ukrainian government enough to where the Ukrainian government said I was okay, and they were going to give me Ukrainian identification. So I took it into a basically like a lawyer's office, and they transcribe everything from the English to the Ukrainian, and right there on the Ukrainian, like Ukrainian wording, like I did the Google Translate, and it has my identifier on there, and I'm like, well, you know, like, and that was, you know, like okay, well, they're not gonna let me, and like I said, 2 days later, they're like, all right, your criminal background came back clean. Let's go. And I was like,
Wow.
you not see that? But
Do you find that when someone is going to another country requesting residency and they have an SO charge, is there any consideration in terms of either the type of crime, contact or non-contact, or the length of time since the charge, or any other issues that come into play when they determine case by
I
case
think
whether
that's really
somebody?
like a country by country, but that's how it, that's how it works in Germany. They look at, and some of the other countries too, like in the Schengen zone, they look at your charging information. Because like when I was in Germany, and I'm probably the oddball of people on the registry, is like everyone else I talked to, they're like, yeah, I'd never been in trouble before. Like I grew up in trouble. I have raised hell since, I mean, I was seven. Like I was a horrible kid. I was a horrible teenager. I was bad in my 20s. Like I was still getting in bar fights in my 30s. Like, I mean, I was not a good guy. And that was part of, what came into play with everything with me was, I had a very checkered past. And so when I went to Germany and they're like, it's like list all your crimes. I'm like on the website, I'm like looking up, I'm like, okay, oh, damn, I forgot about that. Like I was that bad.
Yeah, I was squeaky clean until 57, so.
So that's why I say I'm the oddball, because everybody else, I didn't start getting my life together until after. That's when I spent from the day they released me until I left the United States, I was in school the whole time. Did two different associate's degree, one of them to work on airplanes. And so I got my, my FAA certification to work on airplanes, and then went back for a bachelor's degree, and then a master's degree, then another master's degree, and I got my PhD, all but dissertation, just because I ran out of money. I quit my job in March of 2022. Didn't really work. I opened up my own business, but it didn't take off until almost like right before I was leaving the States, and didn't last very long once I wasn't, in these people's faces all the time. It probably lasted about 7 or 8 months altogether. Actually, it lasted about 10 months from my first big customer to the very end. And I hadn't been in there to see him for, 2 months. And I got a call, and he's like, hey, when can you come in? And I was like, right now I'm on a boat going across the lake from Germany to Switzerland. And that was it.
Someone just asked the question, how do I get hired for a job? No one wants to hire someone on the registry or a Megan's List. Now, you obviously have some interesting skills and do things that regular people probably wouldn't be okay doing, but you've talked to other people who are basically on the same path as you. What do other people do to earn money?
The one guy that I have dinner with every Thursday, he actually buys my dinner every Thursday. He does like he creates animations for websites and does like 3D work, all that kind of stuff. And most of everything I do has to deal with research or a website. And the people in Germany, they all work fast food, because that's just kind of what you do in Germany. If you're gonna move over there and get a job, you just go to a fast food place and you just work fast food, and it pays enough to, it pays enough that you could live on. But if I would have went that route, I probably would still be in Germany if I would have done that when I first got there. But I was kind of running out of, I was getting to that part where I was just kind of scared about, staying and running completely out of money. Because I didn't leave the United States with a lot. I was relying on that income coming in every month.
Sure. But you've been okay. You've been,
I mean, there's been times like
when
even
you
that I've
decrease
since
your
I've been in
cost that
Cambodia where,
much, the money you
yeah. But I mean, there's been times where in here, like actually in December, I was worried how I was going to pay my rent in January, and then at the last minute, something came up that, gave me a few more months worth of income. And then, a couple of weeks ago, I got something else that gave me some more income. And then my sister-in-law, I'm designing a website to replace their website provider. And so I'll have steady income, at least, for that running their website and their marketing and advertising. So it's, the tough part, man, I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't trying to get a job when I was in the United States. Like I got the job that I had, because of an introduction. And I started out there, just kind of doing the jobs no one else wanted to do. And the guy that owns these car dealership groups, the very first thing he did, I didn't realize it at the time, but he sent me on what they call a dealer trade. And I got in a car with an old retired guy and drove out of the state, which I was on probation for and could have gotten in trouble, but I also needed a job. So he drove me up to Michigan. I picked up a car and drove it back. And the whole way up there, we talked about, like religion and trains and planes and just all kind of stuff like that. And it turns out that was the owner of the car dealership's dad. It was kind of like a character check to see what kind of a person I was. Because I went in and applied for a job and they said, sorry, we can't do it. And then the guy kind of thought about it. And a couple of days later, my brother called me and said, hey, I need you to get up here to the dealership. You can make, I think it was like 10 bucks an hour, but I mean, it beat sitting on the couch at my brother's house. And I did that. And then I like they he was opening up two car dealership groups, and I'm a pretty decent project manager. So he put me in charge of opening these two buildings up at the same time. So I opened up a Kia store and a Hyundai store, just managing the construction and the IT infrastructure and all that kind of stuff. And and that was all contract, like 1099 work for the first few years. I went to go work at the airport at a engineering firm, and I worked there until the registry became a problem. And even when I went there, they're like, yep, your criminal background check came back clean. And I was like, sweet. And I was working at the airport. I did that for a couple of years. And then I got called in the office one morning and they're like, hey, is this you? And yep. And they're like, oh, we're gonna have to let you go. And here's a trespass from the property. You can't ever come back. We're gonna get all your tools and bring them to your house. And then that's when the dealership decided to hire me on as a marketing manager. And from marketing manager, I started being a desk manager, and then I was a general manager, and then I was the manager of the general managers, with just the, so
Okay, I see
that
another
one.
question about Social Security payments.
If it's if it's
Does
if
anybody
it's
know, can Social Security
retirement
payments
payments,
follow you?
if it's retirement payments, there's all kind like there are so many retired Americans living in the city that I'm in right now, because their Social Security goes so much further. It's the same reason why people move to Mexico, but their Social Security goes so much further here. And your Social Security, you just have it. They have it direct deposited. I see that question. So, like any money that I get goes into an American bank account, and then I transfer it from my American bank account to my Cambodian bank account. And it's the same thing with Social Security payments. That's how they do it, is they're getting it direct deposited, and they just keep the same bank that they have in the United States. Like if they move to Cambodia, all you need is a 6-month visa. You take it to the bank. One of the nice things about Cambodia is you can either use the Cambodian rial or pay in US dollars. So it makes it really simple. Like all the prices are in US dollars. When you go to restaurants, it just says like $3, or they don't put the Cambodian prices. They don't put real prices because it's 4,000 rials for a dollar. So it makes it look better when they say it's $3 versus it's 12,000 real anyway. So, but yeah, all the Social Security, all that kind of stuff is you don't have to change anything.
So it sounds like there are people who move to foreign countries just for the cost of living, and the
Oh yeah.
registry has nothing to do with it, so you'll be in good
Yeah.
company.
Yeah. Like right next door, right below me, is and a guy opened up a bar right next door. He's Australian, and so it's kind of a I still call myself a foreigner. They feel better when they call themselves an expat. So like it's just like the bar is just full of Americans and Australians and Brits. And
Yeah,
it's like old
I've heard a
retired
lot
guys.
of stories like that.
Yeah, it's just old retired guys just sitting down there and
And one of the last questions here was, do you think it'd be realistic for someone like you, like us, to live in Cambodia long term? Do you see any?
I plan on it. Yeah, I see like military and social security, it's the same thing with money transfer. I use Wise, and that's I just have my money put into Wise, and then like if somebody's gonna pay me money, I give them my Wise account information. They wire transfer or whatever you call it, ACH it into my bank account, and then I just transfer it over. So yeah, I mean, if you have military and social security coming in, like
If
you're
someone wanted to follow up with you, we're getting close to the end. If someone wanted to follow up and ask you questions in the future, I gave him your follow you on Instagram thing. Would it be okay if they reached out to you and asked you a question?
I prefer it to be through email.
Okay.
I keep my social media circle pretty like basically I've had to hug you or my daughter's had to give a recommendation like hey
Yes.
this guy's a, like this guy wants to talk to you. Will you become friends with him? So
Yes, but I could
if I
give them
haven't
your
hugged you,
email.
yeah, put my email out there. That's fine.
Okay.
If I haven't hugged you, I can't be friends with you on Facebook,
All
Instagram. Sorry.
right. So if I lost your question, if you asked something that hasn't been answered, raise your hand or type it again. I've been trying to kind of follow all the comments and make sure that we're here we go. His email is there we go. So
There we go.
SteveWK2009@gmail.com.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, just
Somebody
shoot me an
asked a
email real
question
quick. I'll
about
respond.
wanting to, she used to work as a contractor. She likes to work part-time. We just did a war room a couple weeks ago about employment when you're on the registry. I haven't gotten it uploaded yet, but I think people said a lot of helpful things that were valuable there. So if you're already on my war email list, when I get those last few, I haven't done any editing since the move, but I'm still planning on getting those last few edited and posted. So that one about employment I thought was really good. We had a couple people on talking about how you could apply for grants to drive trucks long distance, and then there were a lot of other people just chiming in about. There are fields where they are desperate for workers, and so sometimes I think people on the registry, especially when they're first looking for a job, it's so disheartening to get no's that people just get afraid to they get afraid to ask, and they just kind of quit asking. But I had a lot of people say, "Oh yeah, there are jobs out there that we could really go for."
You know, one place that I would say is if you're near an Amazon facility, right before like I had actually started at Amazon, and then while I was there, got a response to one of my emails that said, hey, we would love to do business with you. And so as soon as I got that first check, I quit Amazon. But at Amazon, I applied. Like they checked the registry. It came up. They asked me to explain it. I explained it, and they, they're like, "All right, come in."
Okay, someone
So
wants to know why you didn't try to go to Schengen countries. Well, you did first go to
I
Germany.
did.
That's a Schengen country.
I actually went to all the Schengen countries. I've been to all
And
of them,
what
which
someone asked
because I started in
if you
Ireland.
feel like ETI, I don't even know what ETIAS, what does
That's
that mean?
a new. That's a new system. You have to basically apply for approval before you go. It's the same thing like with me going to Israel. I got approved to go to Israel. I don't think the ETIAS will stop anybody from going to the Schengen countries. It might slow down the process a little bit, but I don't
Yeah,
think
it's called
most
European
people.
Travel Information and Authorization System.
Yeah, it's and I don't. Like they've been talking about putting it into full effect. I don't know if it's in full effect now, but it like I keep talking about doing it and talking about doing it, and it's I don't think it's going to be an issue for most people. I think, I mean, if you're somebody with, like repeat offenses or something like that, I think that might keep some people out. But the hardest part, besides leaving your family, which is like hard, and I see somebody that asked if my family had come visit me here. The daughter that's on here won't like. She didn't even like to leave her house. She doesn't like people, even though that's what she does for a living, is helps people with their problems. She doesn't like to put up with people's bullshit, and so she's kind of a homebody. But my youngest daughter, she went and got her passport. And the hardest part about moving or traveling for anyone is always going to be money. And going into Peru, I saw that question jump up. No, he did not go from the United States. I think he went to Aruba first. So he flew from the United States to Aruba, which is a Dutch or Denmark country, whatever, island. So he went to Aruba first, and then from Aruba into Peru, and had no issues. I got somebody else that's going to do the same thing, to go to Ecuador, sometime soon. So they're going to go to Aruba first, and then the guy's got himself a girlfriend in Ecuador he's going to go visit. So
Okay. Get hassled. All right. And by the way, Steven stayed up till 1:30 in the morning for this. It's 1:30 in the morning where he's at, and he says he is not a late night person. So we all just really appreciate you coming on because I get lots of calls, lots and lots of calls from people who are, following you guys who were brave enough to leave the country, and hearing your stories and just, hearing that you've found ways to find community and be happy where you're at, I think is a real it's a real ray of sunshine for
Yeah,
us. So
the everyday life is like 1,000 times better. It's the missing, like missing family. Like just I had a middle daughter. She passed away. Today, your time, she would have been 30. So after this, my daughter's probably going over to her mom's house, so that they could have a dirty 30 for her sister. So she passed away when she was 22. Just one thing before I go. I had to go to prison for this, and I didn't have a relationship with my daughters during that time. And it was my oldest daughter who I had a relationship with. Actually, second, my youngest daughter is by a different by a baby mama, not an ex-wife. So my baby mama got a hold of my oldest daughter, Patience, and said, "Hey, your dad wants to talk to you." And she's like, "No, thanks." And then she did some investigating. She did her like due diligence, and she was like, "Okay, so she agreed to it." And me and one of my friends met her and met my three grandchildren at the time, I think. Met them at a restaurant. Was it just two? Okay, I couldn't remember. That's right. I remember the conversation now. We met them. That was the first time I got to see my two oldest grandchildren, and got to see my daughter for the first time in, it had to be like, I don't know, it was a long time. I hadn't seen her since she was, I think she was 11, when we got
Wow.
separated. So it was a long time. And the only thing like that kind of got me through was, I would just say, "God, if you're there, just please let my daughters know that this," because they were supposed to be the victims. So just please let my daughters know that this didn't happen. Just if anything else in this world, like as long as they know that this didn't happen, then I'm good with whatever else you throw at me. And I'm trying to live up to, my part of that deal. But it's tough, especially on days like today. But the rest of it is cake work compared to like living under under the thumb of the registry. Nobody looks at me funny here. Nobody's Googling, Googling who you are and coming up with your name, your name and picture, which
Posted mean stuff about you on Facebook.
but it's anybody else that has any questions, just send them to me. I'll try to answer them. I can only go off my experience, but my experience outside the United States has been nothing short of amazing. The people that I've met, friends that I've made. Before when right before you tried to call me on Instagram, the guy from the Sahara Desert was trying to call me on Instagram. Yeah,
All right, I want
so
to show everybody how to save the chat because, Steven's email's in there and my email's in there. So go into the chat. There's three dots at the top that say more, and you click save chat. And then after you quit the Zoom, a little thing will pop up with all these things. So at any point, if you have any questions, I mean, I have a lot of, I have connections to people who maybe could answer a lot of these questions. So I don't know all the answers, but I usually know somebody who knows somebody who might know the answer to your question. So I love you all. Steven, I'm so glad you're not in a war anymore because that was terrifying. And I love not having to worry about you like that. And
thank you.
Patience, I'm so glad that you got to come and join us for this talk. Oh yeah. I mean, and I just moved away from my family, so I'm just trying to make a better effort to like call people. Oh, to save the chat, go just open the chat, and there's three dots up at the top. It'll say special Sunday war room, 11 a.m. Click on the three dots and then say save chat. Anyway, I appreciate you all. Thank you for coming. And if you have any questions, reach out to me in the future. Thank you,
See ya.
Stephen.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Anybody who's not able to save the chat, if you send me an email, I'll save the chat and Larry W. Probably. Larry, are you is your last name start with a W? Is it Larry dot J dot something? Yes? Okay. All right. I will send you the chat when I find it. All right. Thanks, everybody. What's your email, Yanina? I should have that too. The next meeting will be not this coming Tuesday, but 2 Tuesdays from that. I will just send this chat and this recording out, I guess, to everyone. And the next war room will be on the 10th of March. I don't know who. All right.